Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy. Yes, we're back after about a 2.5 week hiatus. Today is Thursday, the 9th of June, 2022. Kyle Robertson, the striker, the Shield, Jacob Myers, and of course myself, Michael Arias. All of the Columbus Dispatch, please go to dispatch.com. We have copious coverage of the crew and lots of other stuff there. Jacob just piles the stuff in there and in all kinds of formats. And if you want to know what's going on with the crew, dispatch.com is the place to go. We're often happy and sometimes displeased that Patrick Flaherty is at the controls per usual. So thanks for joining us, gentlemen. Let's get right to it here. Since we last met, the crew's played two games. One was, and Kyle, you can talk about this one. One was the twice delayed loss to LAFC at the new Crew Stadium. What a day that was.
Long.
What did we get, like 2.5 inches of rain that day? Something like that.
What was the lightning, too? Yeah, that was the big thing. Was the 10-mile radius of the lightning for about 4 or 5 hours.
I don't know. Tom Reed was whining all day about being too wet or something like that. So obviously rain was a factor, too. And a week later, on May 28th, the crew bounced back to beat Atlanta. Jacob, that was their first road win of the season. You were down there at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium eating soul food and sometimes watching soccer. It did.
And playing golf.
It did change the tenor of the team, the aura surrounding them heading into a 3 week international break. I mean, it really did. It was a 2-1 win, kind of gritted it out at the end. But well done. Didn't think this team could win on the road till they actually did. You know what I mean? It seems so far away. Speak to that game and what they were talking about coming out. And one of the things they were talking about, and we'll get to in a minute, is the anticipation of what they might do when the next international signing window opens on July 7th.
Yeah, so going in, I think the narrative, and probably correctly so, was it was a, we use this word a lot, but a massive game for them going into the window.
Dropping massive.
Whoa.
What, just a big game? Is it just be redundant? But yeah, look, they could have been 6 points back of a playoff spot versus 2 points back. And even this early in the year, 13 games in, that's a huge difference. And even if it was a draw, it would have been 4 points back. So I think just from that standpoint, it was a big win.
Yeah, as things stand, the cream's rising to the top in the Eastern Conference. New York City is at the top of the ladder with 26 points, Philly with 25. And down in ninth place, just 2 points below the playoff bar, is your Columbus Crew. Of course, Charlotte, Miami, and Cincinnati are directly ahead of them. And that really, if you're looking at things on paper prior to this season, that shouldn't have happened. Anyway, I just wanted to give the standings update. There they are, 2 points below the bar. It could have been worse if they dropped points on the road in Atlanta. So
yeah, I mean, in that game, they kind of flipped the script a bit. And I've been wondering this for a while, and I think we've talked about it at times. I almost feel like this team, certainly they have to do this when Lucas El Rayan is not on the field like he was in this game, but sometimes they're better without the ball. And what you saw was them just taking advantage of their big chances they had. Very first minute, Jonathan Mensah, pretty free header, doesn't. I mean, the defender just loses him in the middle of the box, scores, takes the early lead. I believe that was only the third time this season they had taken the lead, third or fourth. I can't remember. But it didn't happen very often. And then Eric Hurtado, who has suddenly emerged as, I would say, probably the starting striker right now, gets the start over Miguel Berry. And he scores his second goal in 4 games in a great one-on-one finish.
Just out-physicaled him, too. Just
Yeah, I mean, you saw his pace.
Neck tattoos.
I can confirm he doesn't have any. But yeah, he was very aggressive in getting to his spot and scoring. And Aloy Room showed up and had his biggest game of the year.
A couple nice saves there at the end.
Very good save. One right off the line. It does still worry me that this team is like inches away almost every time from giving the game away. I mean, it was in the 90th minute and they had a 2-0 lead.
Right.
And probably should have been a tie game by the end. But they come away just 2 points back now of a playoff spot and some momentum. But some injuries as well. Yep. Artur has a calf injury that I believe was about a month or so. If I can remember correctly, I was covering the Memorial Tournament, but what Caleb Porter said.
It looked rough there at the end when he was limping around.
Well, so, and locker rooms have opened now, and this was my first opportunity to go on the road and talk to these guys, and he was sitting there, and he was telling me it was just completely dead. I mean, you could tell he was basically unable to walk out there. I believe he even said that to me. And then Pedro Santos, who rarely ever gets hurt, pulls his hamstring. He's going to be out a few weeks. Lucas Ellerayon went from a knee issue to a thigh issue, though I believe Caleb Porter wasn't incredibly clear what the injury was. There was a report that said 4 to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Then he said 3 to 5, so probably about 6 weeks, maybe, unless he can play a 45 here and there. Or any other injuries?
Yeah, there's Jonathan Mensah. That's much more recent.
Yeah, Jonathan Mensah with Ghana in their international match, Africa Cup of Nations qualifier. Had a head-to-head collision, didn't look great, but I was able to get into contact with him that day. He said he was feeling much better. Neck scans, head scans, all negative. Asked if he wanted to be the one to, you know, tell Crew Nation that he was okay. He said, no, go ahead and tell them their captain is fine. So I expect him to be ready, and the team expects him to be ready for the June 18th match against Charlotte.
Was Yao dinged up?
He was dinged up, but there was no injury specification with him.
Kyle, you've had numerous negative head scans. What's that like coming back from?
Concussion or not.
Oh, you're talking about concussions. All right.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And then it's kind of been looming ever since Jossie Zardes was traded, and that was some weeks ago, that the stated aim was to clear a DP spot, to clear cap space, and to sign another DP striker using, you know, in part the allocation money they acquired from Colorado in the trade. And it's been talked up like this was going to be a big thing. Obviously, a DP is a big thing. Let's kind of go over the rumors, Jacob and Kyle. You know, for one thing, we heard a lot about Gustavo Del Prete, an Argentine I guess striker, winger, where that stands now, according to reports out of Mexico, is he's going to be signing with Pumas in Mexico City. One that got away, I don't know, but there were a lot of rumors out there. And
one that got away, I think, in the sense of just those clubs are richer than. Yeah. I mean, but the hell?
See, no, I don't know. I kind of said that, you know, with a question mark on it. I'm not saying that.
They were competitive, but ultimately chose the Mexican club, right? I think it's the proper way to.
As far as we know, and then now there are other rumors, Jacob.
Yeah. One being former Houston Dynamo and Club Tijuana striker Mara Manotas has been rumored by several outlets. Here in the U.S., also in Colombia, where he's from, and then in Mexico, that he's set to sign with the Crew. And after checking, I mean, it was even Caleb Porter who kind of said this on the record, that they're still, he said a couple weeks away. I think they're closer than that. But this is a player who Caleb Porter didn't say this directly, but it made sense the way he was talking about. They have other guys they're still looking at, and just looking statistically at this guy, I don't think he's their top target. I think they're still waiting to see who else maybe they can get. And this is, I would say, their backup option.
Well, Kyle, if this is all they come away with at striker, it's underwhelming.
Yes, I think so. I
mean, especially the way they traded, you know, an iconic figure in team history and said, we're going to upgrade it.
And just a few stats on that, because I looked into it. A lot of, I'm sure what you guys were thinking is, well, this player is no better nor worse than Jossy Zardes. Looking statistically in his time with...
He is younger.
Yeah, younger.
He is younger. That's a big factor for sure. He's 26. Jossy's 30. Monotas had 64 goals, 18 assists in 167 games in all competitions with Houston, whereas Jossy had 61 goals and 9 assists in 122. Breaking down goals and assists per 90, Jossy was 0.63 with the Crew, and Monotas was 0.67 with the Dynamo. And then with Club Tijuana, better competition for sure, but he hasn't been in great form. 10 goals and 5 assists in 47 games, which is a 0.41 goals and assists per 90.
And they're ready to move on from him. Kyle, again, I get that.
I'm with you. I think that if that's, you know, your equivalent, then I think a lot of Crew fans, you know, but if that's the backup or if that's not their main guy or if they see him more as a winger, then, you know, that's a plus if they say there's other big fish out there. But I just think that's, you know, I think ever since the stadium's open, you know, and them kind of promising, hey, we're going to bring in a big name, I think that come up a little short.
Well, let me ask you this, Kyle. What do they need to get to the playoffs?
Well,
I mean, they're right now. They got back in the hunt with 3 points, but
I think you need a healthy Zardes, and you need a goal scorer, a guy that can what Porter said, a guy that can put in 15-20 goals.
15-20
minimum. But I don't think the guy that they're looking at right now is that. You know, I know in the past, didn't he have like 19 goals one year?
19 goals 1 year with Houston. The thing I wonder too, I agree on the surface, on the paper, it would certainly be a disappointment and not line up with what they want.
Yeah, this is no disrespect to Minota.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and the way he plays, maybe it just works better with the wingers, with Lucas Ellerion, because he is a guy who could create more at his feet than Jossy can. So maybe the puzzle piece fits better, but, you know, we'll see if they get him. We'll see how he performs, of course.
Again, it's what's pitched. Perception's important. Caleb Porter said flat out what we need is a top goal scorer, and he said that in April.
They're well aware, too, of what signing a guy like Minotas would look like. I think they're well aware of what the perception would be.
All right. Any other Crew stuff you want to take care of before we kind of tick off some national stuff, Jacob? I mean, when they're back...
the injury bug's a bit of a worry right now.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, those are some important players.
No. Yeah, they're back. The 18th against Charlotte. Then they're on the road on the 25th against Real Salt Lake. Then they have their first midweek game of the year at Toronto before returning at home against Philadelphia right before the international window opens again on the 8th, and they are at Chicago on the 9th. The plan is to get a player in before that window opens. That said, player can train with the team and to have that player ready to play on the 9th. So you're looking at 4 more games here. They're going to be without a quote-unquote top striker. So to your back to your question, Mike, about what do they need from here on out?
That
would be 17 of 34 games played before that player gets here. Ooh. So I think you're looking at probably 9 to 12 goals from that player in 17 games. Is that reasonable?
So you need a Higuain-type impact, if you remember when fair to say, Kyle?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think if you're bringing in a quality player like that, 1 goal every 2 games, that's kind of what you need out of your striker anyway, wouldn't you say?
Well, one that you're spending money on.
Yeah.
So back on June 18th, 7:30 p.m. in the new Crew Stadium, and the opponent is Charlotte, which... is in 8th place, you know, on a tiebreaker.
Fired their coach.
Above them. And how about that? God.
It's so weird. And then what their GM or sporting director says, well, I don't want to say anything at risk of speculation.
All right. All right. Excellent communications staff in Charlotte. No question about that. But that is Pride Night. The Nordic is always...
it's soccer for all night.
Yep.
Yeah, soccer for all night, excuse me. But I think the league bills it as Pride Night with what the crew is doing, correct?
I think it's the opposite. I think it's maybe Pride Night for the crew and Soccer for All for
MLS, soccer for all. But is in any case, Jacob,
which is weak, just for the record.
Does the team have anything planned aside from what the Nordec's doing on its own?
There are a few things I've seen them, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Well, officially, what it is. I guess what it says is they're going to wear Pride tops during warmups.
Yeah, they're on the MLS website. There are other clubs who list like being a part of parades and with different nonprofits and so forth. All the crew said is they're wearing Pride tops for warmups.
Okay, how about a little something for the effort? You know, I guess. Kyle, just shifting gears now to international play. The United States men's national team reconvened with Greg Berhalter a couple weeks ago. Played two friendlies, have beat Morocco, which is a World Cup team, 3-0 in Cincinnati, and
best right back in the world probably.
And then tied, and then tied a 0-0 draw with Uruguay. Obviously, they've won a couple World Cups, although. You know, they're not at the apex of their achievement right now, especially given the South American Confederation. But still a decent result in Kansas City. Do you have any thoughts on those?
Yeah, games? I mean, they're still trying to figure out who's going to be up top. I mean, I think they're desperately searching for a striker, kind of like the crew. You know, they brought in the new guy with Bright.
Haji Wright,
who hasn't.
Jesus Ferreira just doesn't seem to have the finish.
Yeah,
you know?
Pepe kind of fallen off the train. but you know, they're. I mean, I think their midfield's pretty locked in. I mean, they got a lot of guys that are in Europe that are playing really, really well, and you know, the back end I think is all right. And then Stefan,
the Miles Robinson injury really hurt them. So center back turf, and is it right back? They can use some depth, I think. I think it's right back.
But then again, you know, you got, Turner, and playing pretty well. And was it Sean Johnson that got the start this weekend?
He was good.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, you'd like to see Zach out there, you know, obviously for all crew fans and, you know, with his time at City. But, you know, I'm sure as you know, as an older guy, backs are real tricky.
Thanks, Kyle.
There's still no there's no player I think that they would throw in net and I would be like, I don't know if this guy can get the done.
Right.
As much of a question mark it is, even Sean Johnson, who I like quite a bit, I would say he's one of the top goalkeepers in MLS. I think any of those guys could make the saves needed.
Wouldn't he be fourth behind Horvath then?
Right? No, Horvath wasn't even playing in his club. So,
I think – news out of this weekend was the starter. I think is he at Forest, Nottingham Forest?
Yeah,
that he's leaving. So I mean, he'll get some starts.
Very possible in the Prem.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think Zach, it could just be simple that he's played a brutal calendar here. Even if he's not playing a lot, he's training and going to these games for UEFA Champions League qualifying. It could just be as simple as he needed a little rest, which.
But he also needs to play, though. He does. I think that's going to be the most interesting situation is he needs to get in a spot where he can put in 10, 15 games, I think, before the World Cup. You know, you don't want to.
So this international window is.
Was there one more?
There's one more, and they're going to have a couple friendlies. I think they've yet to schedule in Europe in September. And then November 21st versus Wales is their first World Cup game in Qatar. So there's only going to be one more chance to get together, really, although there might be a camp in there somewhere. But I think that would be it. So, yeah, that is you kind of want
a striker.
He's trying, guys. Yeah. It's a tough road. Upcoming for the U.S., they play tomorrow at in a Nations League game against Grenada in Austin. And then they play at El Salvador in another CONCACAF Nations League game on Tuesday. So – We'll get a look at them in real competition with the groupies brought together, and it's a heavy rotation. Well, not a heavy rotation, but it's
guys.
About 30. I mean, he rotated guys in that he wanted to evaluate that may not be, but he wanted
he's looking for answers and he's trying new guys.
And he probably should rotate these next couple games because I believe most preseasons for the European teams start like July 1st or something.
Yeah.
Absolutely brutal. Just, you know, Pulisic, McKennie, those guys, they don't need to go to El Salvador again. I do want, and I think the majority of the U.S. men's national team fan base wants to see this team have an awesome performance on the road. That was something that was severely lacking in qualifying. Awesome performance being getting a win. I still think a 0-0 draw at Mexico is good and not worthy of saying the coach should be fired after.
Well, they say that after.
But I digress.
Every 20 minutes. You know what I mean? It's
do you see,
comes with the territory. El Salvador is a tough place to play too, Kyle. You know?
They've always had their issues in qualifying down there. So,
did you see that I believe it was American Soccer Analysis, made this like they put in so many thousand U.S. men's national team like reply guys on Twitter tweets, and they made a bot that like you just put in like Greg Berhalter and it'll spit out some tweet. It was pretty funny.
Oh, the children are great, aren't they? Yeah. You know, it was an interesting weekend despite all the like NBA and NHL action. That Ukraine game on Sunday in Cardiff against Wales, the last play-in game for to get into Group B, the United States group with Iran and England at the World Cup. You know, the whole world was rooting for Ukraine, and geez, they played great. Yeah. They played, they left it all on the field, and they lost on an own goal. Couldn't blame the defender on that free kick. You know, he tried to head it out of harm's way, but, you know, Gareth Bale, that was like a thousand miles an hour. And the guy, I mean, it's lucky he didn't kill him, but headed into his own net. And it was like the end of that game, Kyle, was like one of the saddest things I've ever seen.
Well, I mean, I'm happy for Bale. I mean, I think he's always been, you know, one of these great players who's kind of had to put everything on his back and shoulders and try to get them in because they,
hey, that guy's looking for a club. Maybe they can bring him here and I'll gladly play a round of golf with him. He's a big golfer. Probably not a live tour guy, hopefully.
Ooh, yeah.
You should run some wind sprints with him. the later that day, the U.S., I think it was Sunday, they played in Kansas City against Uruguay, another World Cup team, I think ranked 13th in the world. Decent performance, but released a letter prior to the game urging Congress to pass sensible gun legislation coming off the latest shootings in Uvalde and Buffalo, which, you know, Berhalter started his press conference with it, saying how proud he was of the team. Like, they're as sick as everyone else. And, you know, if you read the letter, and I encourage anyone to do it, it was well done. Right. It says, you know, we don't know how much change we can affect, but we're going to try because, you know, we have this stage. And I'm all for that.
Yeah, no, I am too. I think anytime an athlete takes a stand on, you know, either way, I give them mad props because nowadays, you know, I think a lot of athletes are just, you know, right in the middle.
Well, especially you're talking about international soccer players. I mean, what percentage of that team plays overseas in Europe specifically? And, you know, what they hear is all the time is what's going on in America? Right. Why? Because, you know, these mass shootings don't happen anywhere else in the world. And I think they're tired of explaining to, you know, their teammates, their brethren, their cohorts in other parts of the world why this happens here, you know. And I can't blame
I think it's great.
And lastly here, Jacob, we have Canada, which is the players are taking their stand. They want more transparency in the process of the way they're compensated, and they boycotted
the men's and women's.
The men boycotted a game friendly against Panama. They had just canceled that game, and it was rescheduled once and then canceled.
They canceled against, I can't remember the opponent, I want to say El Salvador, that could be wrong, but then they scheduled Panama. Panama flew there, and then they decided not to show up to the game.
So this is gumption. And, you know, if you're a fan of Soccer Canada, you know, your guys just won the region in World Cup qualifying, and now they're using their platform to to get fairly compensated.
Yeah.
Or at least let's look at it, open the books, you know.
Yeah, I haven't like looked into this issue a whole lot, or I've more so just listened to people more tapped in and who have formed intelligent or what I perceive to be intelligent opinions on this. And what I've come away with, what they said, and I tend to agree with, is it's like the Canadian Soccer Federation is now kind of at the big boys table. Yep. Now that their men's team is in and their women's team, all of them are probably looking at what the U.S. men and women just did with their collective bargaining agreement.
Yes.
The women are saying, right, hey, we've, you know, been toe-to-toe with the U.S. over so many competitions, just beat them at the Olympics. They should be at that level too. So that's more interesting to me, is just to see what those CBA talks in the CBA deal between the men's and women's national teams for equal pay here, yeah, does globally.
Well, the U.S. women have for 30 years been an incredible force for, yep, change in the sport all over the world. They've been a beacon, and sometimes they rub people the wrong way. I say viva yo. They stand for a lot of the right things, and they use their power, and they, right, should. At the same time, right, you know, MLS is when the MLS players organized, and there were some active players here. That was about 10 years ago or so, maybe 15. But when they formed their union and started to publish, the union published the salaries, that is the kind of transparency that these players, these unions need, because it puts it out there. It puts it just like other sports, you know, do the same thing. Yeah. And it's because the players do benefit from the transparency. I don't know. I'm prattling on here.
No, but I think it's a shift in the game. I mean, I think as we're seeing here in the United States, it's, you know, I think there's always been really good soccer, but now with the TV money and all these other entities and digital media rights and everything like that, that, you know, the players should be getting, you know, their fair share of their compensation. And I see that Canada is kind of on the same, you know, trajectory, kind of like as the United States with their soccer and with the World Cup coming, you know, 2026, right? It's Canada,
Mexico,
you know,
and the U.S.
Yeah, Mexico and the United States, that they're probably going to see a shift in the way things are going. And I think it's great. I think it's, you know, they need to be paid. You know, the women need to be, you know, making what the men are making, if, you know, if they have the same success and they're bringing in, you know, the same type of, you know, attendance and, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, I think the only tricky part is, and USA figured this out, is that World Cup bonus, you know, the men's game brings in billions and billions and billions of dollars of ad revenue, where the women's not quite the same. And that was always the sticking point.
The winner money is determined by FIFA too, right, which is a whole other systemic issue,
you know,
here.
Yeah, that's
FIFA. Yeah. There's a transparent organization.
Right.
I think,
but you know what I mean though? It's, you know, that World Cup's been going on for a very long time, and it's, you know, as you know, what you say is bigger than the Olympics. I mean, it's that's big. I mean, it's bigger than Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's bigger than
than Nations League.
It is the big, you know, on a yearly the Champions League on a, right, yearly basis is the biggest,
right?
You know, it's packaged out, but yeah, the World Cup's, right, the biggest event in the world if you want to look at TV viewers. I mean, period.
Yeah. Another
and revenue. Yeah.
Another quick note on that, something that will be more reported in the coming months is what MLS's next TV broadcast rights deal is going to look like. And there have been rumors of them, ooh, getting rid of local broadcasts and just having national broadcasters do all the games, maybe not on site either, which.
Well, that dovetails with the current trend, and that is that, you know, Sinclair, which bought the Fox Regional Networks and paid too much for it, they're losing money. I mean, we're nearing a point where the Bally Sports Ohio's of the world are about to disappear because the business model is collapsing in on itself.
Well, and they're working on a streaming service, reportedly.
Well, and what comes out of that is going to be very interesting to track, because the day is coming very soon when you can't just hit your clicker and watch a Crew game or a Blue Jackets game or a Guardians game. I almost said Indians. Guardians game or a Reds game, and so on and so forth from coast to coast all over America. This dynamic's changing. All the leagues are trying to stay on top of it. You throw in the gambling element and what they think they can get from that industry in terms of revenues. Right. there's a weird stew brewing right now, and I think already one of the casualties that's been burned off right off the top of that stew are the regional sports networks. And how that void is filled is going to be fascinating to watch in the next, starting right now and going forward.
In a bigger discussion, not to be held in this podcast, but there's been no critical thinking whatsoever to what this kind of fetishization of gambling with live sports, with balance, has any effect on just mental health, you know, with gambling addiction. There's been no critical thinking of that. Frankly, I find it repulsive.
Well, there are models out there. If you want to look at England, for instance,
you've been doing it a long time.
You can with the real time gambling. And
maybe Phil Mickelson will come back.
Oh, geez, that tour. We have to stop now once Phil Mickelson gets dropped on the conversation.
Did you see what he's wearing today, by the way?
No, I don't want to know what he's wearing. I don't really know.
Is it the Masters polo?
Yeah, and he has Masters polo and his logo.
Blacked out ink over the Masters.
Jeez. All right.
Other quick note.
I always think of him in, you know, a persecuted athlete sense. Yeah, he's really suffered the slings and arrows of, you know, it's kind of like Muhammad Ali, Phil Mickelson, you know, or, you know, it's really, you know, he's really a beacon of hope to the downtrodden.
Doesn't he have ties to Columbus, though?
We don't want to go there, man. You talking about the FBI ties or the other stuff? All right, Jacob wants to get one more thing in before Patrick Flaherty turns the lights out here.
Quick shout out, Columbus Crew 2, first place in the Eastern Conference at 8-2 through 10 games played. Jason Russell Rowe, I believe, was named the player of the month for MLS Next Pro. So they don't get a ton of coverage. Partially, you know, I'm to blame for that, but I'm the crew beat writer. But they deserve a shout out because they're playing really, really well. And I believe they were down 2-0 in a game the other day and won 4-2. Yeah. They're a fun team to watch. So if you're free on a weekend, tickets are extremely cheap, much cheaper than the $70 upper bowl seats at lure.com field.
They're supposed to play after the LAFC game too, right?
Yeah, and that was a huge bummer. Yeah. They would have probably had a good crowd for that.
Since you mentioned that, you know, Keith Nass texted and said that Zardes and a number of other Colorado Rapids played with the two team last night and they lost to St. Louis by two goals. Are a lot of teams using this window to keep their players fit?
Yeah, absolutely. Eric Hurtado is a great example. The crew did him, sent him down, and he ended up being in good form, came back and scored two goals. That in particular, like, he's not on an international window. I bet the crew are supposed to play tonight against, I believe, Inter Miami second team. I'll check that real quick, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a few guys who are around to just go play in that game.
Get some minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kyle, you get in there, man.
I'm waiting for a phone call.
The striker. Okay, that's it for this edition of the Soccer Speakeasy. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Again, check out dispatch.com. There's a lot of the wonderful galleries by Kyle and all the great beat work by Jacob Myers. I'm Mike Arace. For Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, I thank you one last time. And Patrick, please kick us out of here.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.